This audio program has been produced as a supplement to Longman Complete Course for the TOEFL Test by Deborah Phillips. Copyright 2001 by Addison Wesley Longman Incorporated, a Pearson Education Company. All rights reserved. The use of this audio program for the purpose of copying, transforming, or adapting in any manner, in whole or in part, is strictly prohibited without prior consent of Pearson Education. TOEFL Exercise 30, page 120. Listen to each passage and answer the questions that accompany it. Questions 1 through 5. Listen to a discussion by some students who are taking a drama class. They are discussing their class project on the play Our Town.
We need to get going on our class project for drama class. We have to present a scene from one of the plays we're studying in class, in costume and with props. Our performance is in only 3 weeks, and that's not very much time for all we have to do.
Let's see. We've already decided on a scene. We're going to do one of the scenes from Thornton Wilder's play, Our Town.
And we know who's going to play each part. Bill, you're going to be the stage manager. That's a big part in this play. Tina, you're going to play Emily, and I'm going to play George. We're going to do a scene from the part of the play that takes place before George and Emily's wedding. I've already started learning my lines. What about you two?
I've already started working on my lines.
And I'm familiar with mine, too. I think we're ready to read through the scene together.
Why don't we discuss what we're going to do about costumes and props first, and then we can run through the scene together?
That sounds like a good idea.
I think so, too.
Number 1. When is the student's performance? Number 2. Which of these is not a character in the scene? Number 3. It is most likely that the students are how familiar with their lines? Number 4. What is stated about the scene? Number 5. What are the students probably going to discuss next? Questions 6 through 12. Listen to a discussion about a geology class. The students are discussing iron pyrite.
The next type of mineral we need to talk about is iron pyrite.
Iron pyrite? Isn't that what's also called fool's gold?
Yes, it is. Why is iron pyrite called fool's gold?
It's called fool's gold because it can look something like gold. And some people who found iron pyrite thought they had found gold.
So iron pyrite sort of looks like gold? What exactly does it look like?
It can be shiny golden in color, but its crystals have a different shape from gold crystals. Iron pyrite crystals are cubical in shape, while crystals of gold are not.
How does iron pyrite get its shiny golden color if it's not made of gold? I know the answer to that. Iron pyrite gets its shiny golden color from the mix of elements in it.
Iron pyrite is made from a mix of elements?
Yes. Iron pyrite is a compound of iron and sulfur. So it's very different from gold because it's made of this compound.
And it's also quite different from gold in how it reacts to heat. Iron pyrite has a strong reaction to heat.
Why? What happens when iron pyrite is heated?
When iron pyrite is heated, it smokes and develops a strong odor.
And gold doesn't have that kind of reaction to heat?
No, it doesn't.
Do you know where the name pyrite came from?
I think I know that. It came from the Greek word for fire, didn't it?
Yes, it did.
If you strike iron pyrite with metal, then it produces sparks. Some ancient cultures used to use iron pyrite to start fires. They couldn't use gold that way.
So, iron pyrite did have some use, even if it really wasn't gold.
Number 6. In what way is iron pyrite similar to gold? Number 7. It is implied in the discussion that what type of people thought iron pyrite was gold? Number 8. What is iron pyrite composed of? Number 9. How does iron pyrite react to heat? Number 10. How does gold most likely react to heat? Number 11. Where did the word pyrite come from? Number 12. What can be inferred from the discussion about gold in ancient cultures? Questions 13 through 18. Listen to a discussion in a history class. The discussion is on the history behind the name California.
Today we'll be talking about California and where California got its name. First of all, who was it who actually gave California its name? Lynn?
California was given its name by a Spanish explorer.
And which Spanish explorer gave California its name? Rick?
It was Spanish explorer Hernan Cortes who gave California its name. Cortes visited the lower part of California in the first half of the 16th century and named the area California.
How did Cortes decide on the name California? Did he just make the name up, or did he take it from another source? Pam?
He got the name California from a series of stories that were popular in Spain at the time.
And what kind of series contained a place called California? Lynn?
The series was a fantasy serial that was a bestseller at the time. It was about a knight and his son who traveled the world looking for new lands and new adventures. One of the places that they came across in the story was an unusual place called California.
And what was California like in the best-selling stories?
In the stories, California was an island that was populated by Amazons.
The Amazons were all women, and they were tall and powerful warriors.
And the only metal on the island was gold.
So all the utensils and ornaments were made out of gold. And the female warriors wore armor made of gold and carried weapons made of gold.
So, Cortes named the place that he visited California because he thought it was like the fictional place from the fantasy series, even though he didn't see any inhabitants resembling those of the fictional California. He incorrectly assumed that it was an island, like the fictional place, and I think he hoped that it was also full of gold, like the fictional California.
Number 13. Who gave the area of North America known as California its name? Number 14. In which of these years was the area of North America known as California most likely given its name? Number 15. How was the name California first used? Number 16. What was the fictional California like? Number 17. What is not stated in the discussion about the inhabitants of the fictional California? Number 18. What can be inferred about the California that Cortez visited? Page 122. Example 1 from the computer TOEFL test. Listen to a part of a discussion in a botany class. The discussion is on a type of flower called a calendula.
The next type of flower that we need to discuss is the calendula.
The calendula? I've never heard of that. What does it look like?
It's a very common kind of garden flower in the United States. You've probably seen lots of them. The calendula has yellow or orange petals, and the petals grow in 6 to 10 concentric circles around its center.
Which of the following flowers is most likely a calendula? Page 123. Example 2 from the computer TOEFL test. Listen to a part of a discussion in a phonology class. The discussion is about how the English t sound is produced.
The next sound we'll talk about is the t sound. What type of sound is the t sound? Hannah?
The t sound is an alveolar sound. This means that the t sound is formed when the tip of the tongue is placed against the alveolar ridge and then is suddenly removed.
And where is the alveolar ridge?
The alveolar ridge is the ridge in the mouth just behind the top front teeth.
That's exactly right. If you practice forming a t sound, you can feel the tip of your tongue against the alveolar ridge.
Where is the alveolar ridge? Exercise 31, page 124. Listen to each academic discussion and try to visualize the information in the passage. Question 1. Listen to a discussion by a group of students in a meteorology class. The discussion is on theories about the behavior of storms.
We have just one more topic to cover before we finish for today. I'd like to look at some early theories about how storms develop. The two men I'd like to discuss are William Redfield and James Espy. Redfield and Espy were two American meteorologists from the 19th century, and they had differing theories on how storms behave. Espy argues that centripetal force was at work in storms. Can anyone explain what direction these winds would be moving if centripetal force were involved? Anne?
Centripetal force would cause winds to be moving inward from all directions toward the center of the storm. But that's not what really happens, is it?
No. Espy's theory was that centripetal force pushed the winds of a storm inward toward the center from all directions. Espy's theory has not proven to be very accurate. Now, who was involved in a debate with Espy in the 19th century? Lee?
Redfield was the other meteorologist. Did he agree or disagree with Espy?
Redfield disagreed with Espy. Redfield argued that the winds in a storm rotated around the center of the storm in a counterclockwise direction. Can you explain Redfield's ideas to me? Chris?
Redfield believed that the winds in a storm rotated around the center of the storm, so the winds would be moving in a circular path. And he believed that the winds move in a counterclockwise direction, which means that they move in the opposite direction from the direction that a clock moves.
That's a good description of Redfield's ideas about how the winds in a storm behave. Now for the most important question. We've already said that Espy's theory on how the winds in a storm behave wasn't very accurate. What about Redfield's theory? Was his theory accurate or inaccurate? Anne?
I think that Redfield's description was quite close to what actually happens in a storm.
Exactly.
Number one. How do you visualize the two theories about the behavior of storms? Question 2. Listen to a group of students discussing information from a zoology class. The discussion is on the opossum.
The next animal we need to discuss is the opossum. The opossum is another kind of marsupial.
A marsupial? What's a marsupial?
A marsupial is an animal that carries its young in a pouch.
Oh, like a kangaroo.
Exactly.
And how long do young opossums stay in their mother's pouch?
For about 2 months. Then, when the babies are about 2 months old, they come out of their mother's pouch, but they don't go very far. For the next few months, they go everywhere with their mother.
They just ride along on their mother's back.
So young opossums spend the first 2 months in their mother's pouch, and the next 2 months hanging on her back?
That's right. Now, aren't opossums animals that play dead?
Yes, they are.
And that's why we talk about playing possum if we're talking about pretending that we're asleep or dead.
Exactly.
So when an opossum is frightened by an attacker, it doesn't run away?
That's right. It just rolls over on its back, kind of curls up, and pretends that it's dead.
I guess it's just hoping that the attacker will think it's dead and will go away and leave it alone.
Number two. How do you visualize an opossum? Question 3. Listen to a discussion from an American history class. The discussion is on Chimney Rock.
What I want to discuss next is Chimney Rock. What can you tell me about Chimney Rock?
Chimney Rock was one of the major landmarks for pioneers traveling west in the 19th century.
It was on the Oregon Trail. Pioneers on the Oregon Trail would stop at Chimney Rock because it was close to the Platte River. It was a good place to stop because of the water supply.
And what does Chimney Rock look like?
Chimney Rock is a giant spire of sandstone on top of a large mound.
It kind of looks like a large candle on top of a birthday cake.
A very large candle. It's 500 feet high.
And where is Chimney Rock located?
As we said before, it's on the Oregon Trail, close to the Platte River. It's just south of the Platte River, actually.
And it's on the Great Plains, so the area around it is flat. That's one reason why it's so noticeable.
But it's not in the middle of the Great Plains. It's close to where the Great Plains run into the Rocky Mountains.
And what did it mean to the pioneers when they saw Chimney Rock?
When the pioneers saw Chimney Rock, it meant that they had almost finished the long trip across the prairie.
It also meant that they were almost at the next stage of their trip, the Rocky Mountains.
Number three. How do you visualize Chimney Rock? TOEFL Exercise 31, page 125. Listen to each passage and answer the questions that accompany it. Questions 1 through 3. Listen to a discussion by a group of students in a meteorology class. The discussion is on theories about the behavior of storms.
We have just one more topic to cover before we finish for today. I'd like to look at some early theories about how storms develop. The two men I'd like to discuss are William Redfield and James Espy. Redfield and Espy were two American meteorologists from the 19th century, and they had differing theories on how storms behave. Espy argues that centripetal force was at work in storms. Can anyone explain what direction these winds would be moving if centripetal force were involved? Anne?
Centripetal force would cause winds to be moving inward from all directions toward the center of the storm. But that's not what really happens, is it?
No. Espy's theory was that centripetal force pushed the winds of a storm inward toward the center from all directions. Espy's theory has not proven to be very accurate. Now, who was involved in a debate with Espy in the 19th century? Lee?
Redfield was the other meteorologist. Did he agree or disagree with Espy?
Redfield disagreed with Espy. Redfield argued that the winds in a storm rotated around the center of the storm in a counterclockwise direction. Can you explain Redfield's ideas to me? Chris?
Redfield believed that the winds in a storm rotated around the center of the storm, so the winds would be moving in a circular path. And he believed that the winds move in a counterclockwise direction, which means that they move in the opposite direction from the direction that a clock moves.
That's a good description of Redfield's ideas about how the winds in a storm behave. Now for the most important question. We've already said that Espy's theory on how the winds in a storm behave wasn't very accurate. What about Redfield's theory? Was his theory accurate or inaccurate? Anne?
I think that Redfield's description was quite close to what actually happens in a storm.
Exactly.
Number one, how did Redfield believe that the winds in storms behave? Number two, how did Espy believe that the winds in storms behave? Number three, which of these diagrams most closely represents what winds actually do during a storm? Questions 4 through 6. Listen to a group of students discussing information from a zoology class. The discussion is on the opossum.
The next animal we need to discuss is the opossum. The opossum is another kind of marsupial.
A marsupial? What's a marsupial?
A marsupial is an animal that carries its young in a pouch.
Oh, like a kangaroo.
Exactly.
And how long do young opossums stay in their mother's pouch?
For about 2 months. Then, when the babies are about 2 months old, they come out of their mother's pouch, but they don't go very far. For the next few months, they go everywhere with their mother.
They just ride along on their mother's back.
So young opossums spend the first 2 months in their mother's pouch, and the next 2 months hanging on her back?
That's right. Now, aren't opossums animals that play dead?
Yes, they are.
And that's why we talk about playing possum if we're talking about pretending that we're asleep or dead.
Exactly.
So when an opossum is frightened by an attacker, it doesn't run away?
That's right. It just rolls over on its back, kind of curls up, and pretends that it's dead.
I guess it's just hoping that the attacker will think it's dead and will go away and leave it alone.
Number four. Where would a one-month-old baby opossum most likely be found? Number five. Where would a three-month-old opossum most likely be while its mother is walking around? Number 6. What does an opossum do when it is threatened? Questions 7 through 9. Listen to a discussion from an American history class. The discussion is on Chimney Rock.
What I want to discuss next is Chimney Rock. What can you tell me about Chimney Rock?
Chimney Rock was one of the major landmarks for pioneers traveling west in the 19th century.
It was on the Oregon Trail. Pioneers on the Oregon Trail would stop at Chimney Rock because it was close to the Platte River. It was a good place to stop because of the water supply.
And what does Chimney Rock look like?
Chimney Rock is a giant spire of sandstone on top of a large mound.
It kind of looks like a large candle on top of a birthday cake.
A very large candle. It's 500 feet high.
And where is Chimney Rock located?
As we said before, it's on the Oregon Trail close to the Platte River. It's just south of the Platte River, actually.
And it's on the Great Plains, so the area around it is flat. That's one reason why it's so noticeable.
But it's not in the middle of the Great Plains. It's close to where the Great Plains run into the Rocky Mountains.
And what did it mean to the pioneers when they saw Chimney Rock?
When the pioneers saw Chimney Rock, it meant that they had almost finished the long trip across the prairie.
It also meant that they were almost at the next stage of their trip, the Rocky Mountains.
Number 7. Which of these most closely resembles Chimney Rock? Number 8. Where is Chimney Rock located in relation to the Platte River? Number 9. Where is Chimney Rock located in relation to the Great Plains and the Rocky Mountains? Now please fast forward to the end of this side and turn over the cassette to continue.